You're listening to Science Friday from NPR. I am Ira Flatow, and for the rest of the hour, we're going to do a little mental gymnastics, seeing if we can think of ways that other people may not have thought to help solve them and plug up that spewing oil in the Gulf. As we speak, workers are laboring to lower this 100-ton steel box with pipeline fixed to the top, hoping to capture and pump out the oil spewing from the broken pipes on the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. They've gone down, I think it's 4,000 feet at this point, and they're just trying to get it repositioned to be on the surface of the Gulf and hopefully to position it over the spill. There is no guarantee that this 100-ton box will work since it's never been tried at this depth before. David Clarkson, the BP Vice President of Engineering Projects, told the Associated Press that he was, quote, worried about every part, unquote, of the box containment approach. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano said, I hope it works, but we are still proceeding as if it won't. It looks like, you know, very simple solution, if only the problem were as simple as how the box works. You've got leaking oil pipes. They're a mile beneath the ocean. There's a multi-story pile of wreckage around it. The water is really cold. The Gulf is hot at the surface, but it's really super cold down there. And the oil coming out is under tremendous pressure itself, and a counter pressure to the tremendous pressure at the bottom of the Gulf of the water itself. The oil coming out of the pipe is very hot. But then again, it's really frigid down there in the water. So what happens when you have all this hot oil mixing with the cold water down there? And even if that box contraption works, it's not actually going to plug the leak. It's sort of a makeshift idea to trap most of the oil. The remedy to actually stop the oil involves drilling a second hole into the side of this very small pipe. And once they've located it, that approach could take a good deal longer to do. So what would you do? If you had an idea of how to stop the oil from leaking, maybe capture it better, what would you do? We'd like to hear your ideas. We welcome your suggestions. Go to our website at sciencefriday.com, offer some, or you can tweet us at SciFry, at SCIFRI, or phone us 1-800-989-8255. And here to talk about some ideas are my guests. Robert Behe is the co-director of the Marine Technology and Management Group in the Center for Risk Mitigation and a professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at the University of California at Berkeley. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Behe.
Happy Friday, Ira.
You had some experience on an oil rig, did you not?
Indeed. I had my first assignment to work as a roughneck on a drill rig in 1960.
Wow, that's a
long time ago.
Glad you have to. You were out there in the well. Andrew Revkin is a reporter and writer of the New York Times .earth blog. He's been collecting ideas from his readers about potential solutions to the spill, and he joins us by phone from Costa Rica. Welcome.
Yes, I'm so sorry to not be sitting in an air-conditioned studio in Costa Rica.
Yeah, my life's rough. Somebody has to be down there. But we were reading your blog, Andrew, and people really came up with a lot of different suggestions, did they not?
Well, there are a lot, and obviously it's very easy for the oil company to say, well, you know, we got to stick with what we know. We don't want to make the situation worse. But just this morning I got another email from an applied physicist. Those are people who use physics to do stuff. Brian Rasnow in California, who kind of confirmed what I had sort of mused on over a week ago, May 1st, in a post. I called this post, Is There a Feynman Fix for Leaking Well? And this is about the controlled use of explosions. You have a tube coming up through thousands of feet of sediment from an oil deposit way, way farther down in the earth. And the Defense Department over decades and generations and others have figured out ways to use explosives artfully. You know, you're not just sort of blasting things to kingdom come. You can use them in a very controlled way. And there have been some past situations, one in the Soviet Union where a well was crimped instead of spending months. Mm-hmm. It'll take 60 to 90 days of drilling to get that even close to getting to capping it the conventional way.
I mean, there have people have even suggested a nuclear explosion.
Yeah,
it seems a little extreme.
One of those might have been a little tongue in cheek, but yeah. You know, we don't even have to go there. We have bunker buster bombs that essentially glassify, you know, turn the sediment into something that wouldn't allow that well to keep pumping up. Even the pressure is high, but the sea pressure there is high as well, so it's not as if it's a gusher on the surface.
Robert B., if you're a betting man, what are your thoughts on this containment box approach? Do you think it's going to work?
I think it's got a very good chance of working, Ira. We've got some similar containment devices working right this minute here offshore California, Santa Barbara Channel. The water's shallower, but the approach is the same. And from everything I can track, British Petroleum is following that same trail to attempt to catch this spewing oil before it gets into the water column.
Mm-hmm. And if and when the oil does collect, let's say that the box does work, it's not going to be just oil in there. There's going to be the seawater that, you know, because you're just collecting it on, in the seawater that's going to be cold. You have the hot oil. I think hot oil is a few hundred degrees, is it not?
That's correct.
And then they're pumping a little bit of heated water down to keep it from freezing on the way up. So what it sounds like a very volatile mixture that would have to come out of there.
Well, it is, and Mr. Clarkson, I can tell, is a good engineer because he said he continues to worry, and that's a sign of a good engineer. So it is chancy, but they're using, I'll call it fundamental physics, as Andy was referring to earlier. I think it's got a good chance of working.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, are people lining up for with ideas? You've had dozens of suggestions.
Well, it's hard to know how this all gets down the chain. One thing that concerned me to some extent is that the administration has felt comfortable letting BP remain the lead in solving the problem and not engaging the broader engineering community, at least. And I have a feeling that's happening. It's just not clear on the outside that anything outside of the conventional approach of a relief well is being seriously considered. Mm-hmm. I worry about that sometimes because the convention is supposed we end up with a 60 or 90 day additional spillage and the containment vacuum cleaner down there on the bottom doesn't work very well. You have a hurricane in the mix and, there'll be a lot of grumpiness later. And if you haven't fully considered, at least in a transparent way, the options, then the grumpiness is easier for people for it to catch hold.
Let's go to the phones, 1-800-989-8255. Cameron in Conway, Arkansas. Hi, Cameron.
Hi, Ira. I appreciate you taking my call. Everybody seems to be interested in ideas from outside, the president, BP, and all that, but you can't contact them, so I appreciate getting the chance to talk to you all about it. My thought is if we've got a pipe down there, if we can get that containment box down there to cover the leak, why don't we just snake another pipe down there? And apparently there is already one inside the pipe that you're supposed to be pulling the oil up with, and pour concrete down there as fast as we can. Eventually, even if it doesn't cover the hole immediately, it should eventually cover the hole completely, and with that box is 100 tons of concrete, then there's got to be even more weight that could fit inside it.
So if you say if you fill up the box with concrete, you've got a giant concrete plug.
Right.
What you're saying. Robert B., any comments on that?
Well, yes, you've got a plug at one position in the broken pipe. British Petroleum, there were three of these broken sections of the drill pipe that were, I'll call it in spaghetti form, draped on the seafloor. So they have installed subsea a shut-off valve already on one of those sections. This dome is being placed on one of two remaining sections that are spilling oil. So you could successfully shut this one off potentially this way, but you still have one leaking section. The other thing that's dangerous is you move the problem potentially to another place. And this requires some understanding about how they drill a well and how this accident happened, but you could plug the entire surface, and if, as some of us think, the casing way down at the bottom of the hole is where the mess started, you could form what would be called a shallow outside the casing blowout.
Yeah, and that would not be a good thing.
That would not be good.
That would release a lot of oil blowing if it blew that out. 1-800-989-8255. We've seen people online talking about sending human and animal hair to sort of clean up the stuff on the beach. You know, donate your poodle's hair or your own hair at the barber shop, and at least you'll have something like to put in those booms or sop up the oil as it hits the beach. So it. It looks like people are thinking, Andrew, of certainly unique ways of helping out, at least from a distance.
Well, as Nancy said, one of the big concerns that she had that I wrote about a week or so ago was that historically in these fragile marshes, the solution, going in there in the white suits and tromping around to clean up the birds can make things worse in the long run. So you do, yeah, there too, maybe there's a role for unconventional solutions. The other thing I saw is there are other styles of boom designs. By the way, one thing here that is... still irksome is this was a contingency that should have been planned for in a much more complete way. The reason that an oil spill offshore is much more significant than your standard oil well is because of the amplifying effect of, you know, you're in the middle of the ocean, so that oil can go and cover thousands of square miles very quickly. Mm-hmm. As I wrote in the last 24 hours, they were granted kind of a pass on doing the really serious environmental impact with preparation for this well drilling operation. Why did they have to spend a week manufacturing the containment dome and not have one on hand as a backstop? If you're going to do exploratory well drilling, you know, a mile deep in waters that haven't, in conditions that haven't really been adequately
There should have been a SWAT team ready to go in.
Well, they had a SWAT team. In fact, the Times has a good story, I think, today or was it yesterday, on the company that speed welded the device, but that still took a week. And why not have that dome sort of sitting around? It's not that big a cost compared to the profits that are flowing every second out of the seafloor.
Well, we also hear that there might have been another safety valve contraption that was not included.
Right. These are special circumstances. Drilling offshore, and the same thing happened in the Timor Sea last year. I wrote about it on the blog. It didn't make a lot of headlines because it wasn't surrounded by American beaches, but this is new terrain, and as in a world that's increasingly thirsty for oil, we're going to be going farther and deeper in the Arctic. This summer, they're going to start exploratory drilling in the Arctic Ocean in icy waters, and that will also entail an extra special obligation to make sure the ducks are lined up ahead of time.
Talking about the oil spill in the Gulf this hour on Science Friday from NPR. I'm Ira Flato talking with Robert B. and Andrew Revkin. Our number 1-800-989-8255. Kevin in Tomahawk, Wisconsin. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hey there.
I have a friend that started a company. He patented a process of ground glass. And what it is, it's a real fine glass. You spray it out into the water when there's oil. It adheres to it with, like, surface tension, and it literally will sink the glass. Now, he had approached EPA about this, and they said, oh, no, we can't have it because it sinks. But now my understanding is the EPA is trying to sink the oil to the bottom to stop it from coming. And the glasses actually can be used on the shoreline to prevent when the oil comes in. It'll adhere to the glass rather than proceed.
Do you know if you had the glass that could float?
Right. But
see, if you had bigger beads that were filled, you know, or vacuum or air in there that would float.
Well, we talked about, you know, using a sandblast-type hose out to spray it and then a conveyor to pick it up or a vacuum. But if anybody wants to see the video, it's on glass. Glass-plus.com, and there's a video of how it works in the oil, and it's just phenomenal, and I just can't believe nobody's even trying it yet.
Well, you know what happens, and it's true, Andrew, you were saying that as things change, as they evolve, as we get toward Oilmageddon, as I'm sure someone's going to call it, people will start changing their tactics. Right?
The hot phrase on Twitter this week was oilpocalypse.
Oilpocalypse.
Another thing about this glass, though, is after it's collected, it can be burned in oil or a coal-fired furnaces for our electricity generation.
Mm-hmm.
So it is totally recoverable. So I hope somebody points the direction and looks at that. At least it's got to help.
All right. Well, you've alerted to us. Maybe someone will go over and take a look at it. Robert, any comments on that?
Well, I'd ask Kevin how you collect the glass after you sprayed it and it's gone to the seafloor.
Maybe you could vacuum it up. You know, if it's glass beads, maybe if it's attached to stuff, that's how you could maybe collect it. If it's by surface tension is collecting the oil, then you go down with a vacuum cleaner or something.
Well, there's a seafloor down there that has lots of natural things, life. And so the question is, have we just moved the problem to another place?
Yeah. Are you going to vacuum a lot of other things with it?
Exactly.
Yeah. We've seen some of those nettings in the fisheries do when they drag the ocean floor.
Exactly.
You don't want to. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Trying to think creatively. When will Andrew? When do we know when this thing will actually be in place? They say by the weekend.
Yeah, they're lowering it now. Is the last report I saw.
They're lowering it, but they haven't positioned it quite right yet. You know, it's 5,000. I'm thinking you're 5,000 feet above the surface. When I fly a kite, maybe a few hundred feet above the surface. That tether is no longer straight anymore, right?
I know. Years and years and years ago, I had the good fortune to, long before I was at the New York Times, I went out to dive to a project where Robert Ballard was diving on the Lusitania, not in deep water either, off the coast of Ireland. And they had some pretty serious stuff happen just in that couple hundred feet down to the bottom. And, you know, when you're working 5,000 feet deep, you have to give a lot of respect to the people running the ROVs and trying to do this surgical work. Not to mention the miracle, if they get the relief well right, of a 13,000-foot drilling project to intersect a 7-inch pipe is a pretty remarkable achievement.
Yeah, this is a Hollywood movie in the making. All right.
Super slow-mo, I guess.
Let's hope it has a better ending than most of them do. Well, we're going to take a break and come back and talk with Robert B. and Andrew Revkin some more on number 1-800-989-8255. We're also going to talk with the chief executive officer of Innocentive, who's been sending out his own messages about what would you do to fix this thing. So stay with us. You can tweet us at SciFry or go to our website at sciencefriday.com and leave us a message. Give us a call, 1-800-989-8255. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR. You're listening to Science Friday from NPR. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about technological and possible engineering fixes for the oil spill. My guests are Robert B. of UC Berkeley, Andrew Revkin of New York Times, and joining me now is Dwayne Spradlin. He's president and chief executive officer of Innocentive Incorporated. That's a company that crowdsourcing ideas for various projects, and he has posted a public appeal for ideas to help with the spill recovery effort, and he joins us from Southlake, Texas. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hello, Ira. Thank you.
Have you been successful in throwing out an idea and having the crowd out in the cloud come back with answers?
Well, you know, it's actually been pretty amazing. We have, in only a few days of doing this, we have over 125 formal submissions and probably another 100 come in through other channels like email and others. I think the crowds have really woken up to trying to help here.
Any really interesting ideas that you might share with us?
Boy, there's a ton of them. You know, probably the vast majority of ideas have come in under a category that we call cover and collect, which is really trying to cover the leak. And it's pretty amazing. Those fall into categories of domes and bubbles and cones.
Right.
Some of the ideas almost exactly replicate what BP is doing. What's interesting about some of those is we were getting basically designs for those on Saturday before I think BP's approach was even public. But some of these are just absolutely amazing. They include reference to specific materials. We even had one solver FedEx us at the beginning of this week, a specific kind of a material for use by BP and others if they wanted to try to use that to build a containment chamber. So they've really come out in droves.
You know, we had to just have a suggestion on our ScienceFriday.com website from Ginger, who had a very interesting suggestion. I had seen some of this on Andrew's blog. Think of the pipe as sort of an artery clog, an aorta clot, you know, and you want to bust the clot. They put a stent in there with a balloon, right? Why couldn't you thread a balloon, some sort of industrial grade sort of balloon, open the balloon in the pipe, fill it with something, and now you've got an instant clot that's clogged the artery up.
You know, we've gotten a number of pretty amazing ideas that get close to that, and what a lot of them sort of recognize also is that it's probably thousands of pounds of pressure per square inch. So
right.
Doing that would be fairly interesting. What some of the ideas came back with was, you know, why not actually try to build some sort of a block on the outside? And many of those included use of liquid nitrogen and refrigeration systems and or other kinds of materials which would take sand from the ocean floor and build sort of a natural barrier to limit the flow or eliminate the flow while they, you know, drill that relief chamber. So we've seen a number of those. The ideas of things within the shaft itself have come up, but have generally been limited ideas due to the pressure inside the chamber.
But it's something like 50,000 pounds per square inch.
It's an unbelievable pressure, absolutely.
Wow! And so you'd have to find some way of stopping that.
Stopping or slowing it. Some of the ideas around the use of liquid nitrogen have actually been pretty interesting. What they recognize is that oil already wants to be
is very
thick, so it probably doesn't take much in the way of extra cooling to slow the flow. But again, you still have an enormous pressure there,
right?
So that becomes a complication. But we've also seen a lot of ideas come in around the use of explosives and
right.
other sort of mechanisms to fill it in. One solver actually sent us links to undersea maps, noting that this thing sort of sits at the bottom of a valley area, and potentially an avalanche could fill it in. A lot of those noted that anything which causes structural damage on the bottom could have a massive release of oil. So one of the nice things about solutions we're getting in is these are not just ideas. I mean, we have solvers that are sending in engineering diagrams, you know, a fair amount of analysis in terms of what happens, what the pros and cons are. So it's actually, a lot of these are pretty actionable,
mm-hmm.
which is impressive to see.
Let me ask all three of you, have they given up on the idea of getting that stopgap measure, which didn't stop, that little valve, the emergency valve, the blowout preventer, have they given up on trying to get that to work again?
I haven't heard them mention any progress there. My sense is that's a dead-end street. One thing that I did mention on Dot Earth as well is an issue that I think the whole scientific and engineering community needs to think about. You know, there's this thing underway right now called Grand Engineering Challenges through the National Academy of Sciences and Engineering. And it's all sort of, you know, multi-decadal scale questions, but there's no agility there. I think there's room in this arena for something in between innocentive, which is the whole cloud, and something that's really gets the engineering community, and also within the Pentagon. I mean, my God, as I wrote in 2001, 2002, after 9/11, you know, they use explosives. They're developing all manner of precise munitions that can be used the way a welder would use a torch. So you can use explosions. This isn't about collapsing a valley on the seafloor. It's about crimping a tube. The oil deposit is many thousands of feet beneath the surface with vast amounts of sediment above it, so you don't have to worry about great releases from the seabed. This is a different problem. It's just closing a little tube, and there are ways to do that. And I just that's the kind of thing I'd love to see the administration perhaps. Maybe they're doing this again. You know, we don't really know.
You know, on that point, this is Duane from Innocentive. On that point, I think one of the most interesting solutions that were submitted to us around blowing it up relates to almost an existing solution for sealing a pipe in related conditions. This was actually notes that Los Alamos National Laboratory has a specific competence in designing and fabricating explosive collars, and they built that capability to essentially seal pipes when they were doing nuclear weapons testing for underground testing. And in this particular case, the solver is even giving us contact at the labs and a structure by which you might be able to use this to actually seal sort of this thing underground. It really begs the question, are we really tapping all of the resources we have? A lot of these mechanisms may be underway and completely unknown today to BP and the other people responding.
You know what this sounds a bit like? It sounds like a bit of the Monday morning quarterbacking following Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
You know,
although
what
it's
happened?
Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. What
the
happened
issue
to
here is it's still Sunday. In other words, it's live.
Yeah. Why didn't we have those levees hold up? You know, what happened? Where was the engineering? Why wasn't this thought of in advance? Robert B., we last spoke with you after Hurricane Katrina about the hurricanes in New Orleans and the problems with the levees there. Do you see any of these parallels that I'm seeing here?
Absolutely. The thing that brought me back to New Orleans for Katrina was unexpected behavior of engineered systems. This is something that we've studied out here for now approaching three decades, and this failure has many of the same hallmarks. We're dealing with a dangerous environment in both cases, a major metropolitan area below sea level, living in a dirt bowl where we get hurricanes frequently. In this case, we're drilling 24,000 feet below the surface of the Gulf of Mexico. We got a complex engineered system. It failed. So I'll call it, these are the two hallmarks that bring these two things together.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we have one suggestion coming in here, is if all the debris is in a shallow, if you could make it in a shallow valley, you know, because we talked about there are multiple leaks. There were three. Now there are only two really actively leaking. If you could use, somebody's suggesting, why not blast a little bowl? Don't blast the pipe itself, blast a little bowl and create a bowl so it sits in a bowl, and then you could fill the whole thing with concrete and cover up all the pipe work at the same time. And until you can go in there and you know, at least it would stop the major bleeding, the leaking that's going out at one time. Any feasibility to that?
That's, I think, one of the concerns British Petroleum has right now. If you were to stop all of the surface flow, we've got some pretty good evidence that the leak that we see at the surface is actually channeling from the reservoir something 18,000 feet below the surface. And the pressures down there, as you acknowledge, are approximately 23,000 pounds per square inch. Now, if that pressure can find its way up close to the surface, it'll just open up another channel to then start erupting at the seafloor.
So if you use explosives, you could be cracking that spot and allowing it to escape from another place.
And in fact, that's true. Now, back to explosives for a second. In 1970, I worked on a well blowing out at 22,000 feet in Mississippi. This is known as Piney Woods, Mississippi blowout. We actually worked with Los Alamos at that time on both a conventional and a nuclear explosive package that could be placed adjacent to the well bore below the surface to implode that drinking straw headed toward the surface. In that well, we had to evacuate three cities in southern Mississippi. So it was a serious one.
Wow. Evacuating. I don't think anybody wants to talk about evacuating three cities. So if you're talking about the explosive option, then you're saying you're getting very dangerous with people, and you're playing basically whack-a-mole. If you cover it, if you hit it and close it here, it cracks someplace else and comes to the surface.
Well put. Some
other place.
Well put.
Our number, 1-800-989-8255, is our number. A lot of people with a lot of suggestions. Let's go to Jay in Visalia, California. Hi, Jay.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I have some friends who have a company. They use microbes or bacteria, I guess, to actually digest the oil. It's not something that would be used at the floor, but once the oil is up and out. And the byproducts, I don't know exactly what they are, but something like water and carbon dioxide.
So you would there's no way to stop the oil, you say, but once it gets there, if we need to clean it up, we could use some oil-eating microbes to do it.
Right. Now, of course, I think stopping it would be the best solution, but
yeah.
when it's messed up. And they've got it approved by they did some testing, I think, with the EPA, and they were like 95% effective, and California's approved it, so hopefully it'll be used.
All right. Thanks for that call, Jay. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking about the oil spill and creative ways to deal with it on Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow. I'm talking with Andrew Revkin, Robert B., and Dwayne Spradlin. Dwayne, any other ideas you want to share with us?
Yeah, you know, there have been there's just an enormous number of creative and inventive ideas, including some in the biodegradation area that was just mentioned. But I'll tell you, a personal favorite effort of mine right now is a high school class at Colds Neck High School in Colds Neck, New Jersey. And they made a project out of testing and trying to come up with quick solutions, which they submitted to InnoCenter this past week. And they submitted three very specifically, including videos, experimental results, actually quite impressive. And I think the best idea they submitted was to use a product, which is really a natural vegetable fiber, that they tested themselves right there in their classrooms, which not only sort of repels oil, but creates a natural sort of gel-like, non-toxic barrier. So you could essentially buy this in bulk and spray it and create a temporary barrier while you collect this stuff. It was actually pretty amazing. That's Michelle Silverstone's class. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it kind of shows you the power of getting people involved. These are all great ideas. And I would say what was submitted from that class as an example, rates right up there with some of the great solutions we got from engineers and designers elsewhere all over the world. By the way, we did get solutions from all over the world. So we've had submissions now from Russia, Australia, Romania, the Netherlands, all over the world trying to get in on this project.
Well, Reuters is reporting now that the box is only about 200 feet above the bottom of the sea, as they say, there in the Gulf of Mexico. And Robert B., that those last 200 feet would be very critical, even though they've gone almost 5,000.
That's the most critical. It is a touchdown point, and they've got to get that box straddling this pile of steel spaghetti drill pipe that's spread across the seafloor. So it'll be at that point it gets pretty touchy. Another thing that makes this difficult, I've actually worked on a location close to here where we measured extremely strong seafloor currents. They were running 3 to 4 feet per second.
Wow.
So when they get down close to the seafloor, this ground effect with the currents is going to make this an interesting operation to watch.
And I guess you'd want to ideally have it as level as possible, right? Not tilting
That's
over.
That's exactly right, because you have to depend on the oil being lighter than water to collect it up at the top of that dome so it can be pipelined or siphoned out.
If you have swift currents and sediment down there and then the box is just sitting a few feet above the surface waiting, it could dig its own little hole.
That's exactly right.
I know that from standing on the beach myself when the waves.
Amen.
When the waves come by. So I'm thinking literally outside of that box, trying to come up with the scenario. I guess we'll have to wait till the box is in place, which is supposed to be. It could be any hour now, and then lowering it to the last few hundred feet, waiting to see if it's settled. I know that there are some flanges or rims on the outside to keep it from settling too deep into the mud down there, and waiting to see. It will take a few days for all of this to play out and see how well it's working, and whether there's basically this soda straw at the end of a funnel. It works. I want to thank you all, gentlemen, for taking time to share your thoughts with us, and we'll all be eager to see how this plays out, and hope we'll all be hoping for the best.
Thanks for your work, Iram.
You're welcome. Robert,
thank you.
You're welcome. Robert B. is co-director of the Marine Technology and Management Group in the Center for Risk Mitigation. He's a professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at the University of California at Berkeley. Andrew Revkin is a reporter and writer at the New York Times at the .earth blog, a terrific blog. He's always got some great stuff there. Thank you, Andrew, for taking time from Costa Rica. to be with us today. You're welcome. Dwayne Spradlin, who's President and Chief Executive Officer of Innocentive Incorporated, and they have some interesting stuff going on their website also. That's about all the time we have today for today. Greg Smith composed our theme music. We had help from NPR librarian Key Molesky. We're still blogging and podcasting. If you want to get your comments in on our website, it's sciencefriday.com. There are dozens and dozens of people there sharing their comments. Also, we have our video pick of the week, Luminescence. About that down there, I'm sure in the Gulf of Mexico, a lot of luminescence creatures. Go to our website at sciencefriday.com and look at the video pick of the week. It's up there also. And you can tweet us at SciFry, at SCIFRI. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flato in New York.